violence, murder. It's everywhere you look. It's prime time, it's road rage, it's bizarre stories, it's the video games, the movies, the TV. Is there hope? How do we stop the violence? God speaks words of life and truth. There is a way, and today we'll learn God's solution to stop the violence.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Living on the Edge is an international discipleship ministry featuring the Bible teaching of Chip Ingram. I'm Dave Drewy. Does the commandment, thou shalt not kill, seem a little irrelevant to you personally? Well, as you'll learn, there's much more to this command than meets the eye. So downloading Chip's message notes would be a great way to study along with him today. Jump online to livingontheedge.org and click Listen Now for today's message notes. Now here's Chip with his talk from Exodus chapter 20, verse 13.
In Washington, D.C., a 19-year-old young man was driving in his car, and his testimony was that he was bored. And so he drove by, and there happened to be a lady who was 36 years old sitting in the car next to his as he pulled up, pulled out a gun and shot her point-blank range, put the gun back down on the seat, and drove around Washington, D.C. He was later apprehended by the police. They asked him, why did you do that? Did you know her? Did you have a grudge? Was there a problem? Was there a traffic situation? He said, no, I was just bored. I felt like killing someone. Found out that he'd been out 26 days from a juvenile delinquent center where he had three other attempted murders and had been released. A gang member was on one of the reality TV talk shows some time ago, and he was talking about his experience in a gang and what it was like, and they have captured on film him holding up a beer to the nationwide audience and saying, human life means nothing to me, with a big grin and a glare. The next day, outside of a Houston suburb, he and five of his friends attacked two young teenage girls that were about 14 or 15. They were raped multiple times by the six young men, and then they were strangled and killed, and all six men found guilty. Every 22 minutes in America, someone is stabbed, shot, strangled, raped, or bludgeoned to death. The United States of America has the highest violent crime rate of any country in the world. By the sixth grade, the average American child has witnessed 8,000 murders on TV and 100,000 acts of violence. The 20th century is the most violent, murderous generation of all history of mankind. There have been an estimated 125 million people have been slain in revolutions alone. Stalin is believed to have killed 60 million of his own people. Hitler, 6 million plus Jews. And then the list goes to Idi Amin, the Cambodia killing fields, Bosnia, ethnic cleansing, and the list goes on. State violence, as witnessed in Iraq and other places, has succeeded in killing more people in this century. In the 20th century, in the last 100 years, more people have been killed by their own states than all other people in recorded history up to 1900. Into this world, God says, stop the violence. Into this carnage of the mass murder of human beings, God says, thou shalt not kill. Into this day of technological sophistication but moral disintegration, God places a boundary of protection around the most precious commodity on this planet. And to God, the most precious commodity is the human life. We're going to examine the sixth commandment. It's on your notes, and I would like to examine it by asking and answering four questions. First, what's the meaning of the sixth commandment? Second, what's the purpose behind the sixth commandment? Then I want to make some, what are the obvious applications of the sixth commandment for us in our day? And then finally, what are some not so obvious applications of the sixth commandments that we get right from the very lips of Jesus? I've entitled this boundary, Stop the Violence, and it's found in Exodus 20, verse 13. So let's jump right in. What's the meaning of this command? Literally, there's two words. The two words are no murdering. There are seven different words in Hebrew for the idea or concept of killing. This specific word has the idea with premeditation and intent to take another's life. The Bible does not teach that all killing is wrong. This word is not used, for instance, in reference to the killing of animals, Genesis 9. This word is not used in reference to accidental death or manslaughter. This word is not used in Hebrew of killing someone in self-defense. This word is not used in Hebrew for capital punishment. This word is not used for just wars and the killings that occur in a just war. God does not forbid all killing. God forbids in the sixth commandment, thou shall not murder. And I don't know about you, but I was a young Christian. I did not open the Bible till I was 18. I went away to college, and basically I majored mostly in basketball and baseball, and I got an education too. And there was a guy out of New York City, a really, really tall guy, and I was a Christian, and we had a lot of things that were very different. And he was a senior and I was a freshman, and I always carried his bag. And his goal in life was to humiliate me, and he was very good at it. And so he would get everyone's attention, and then he would rag on Chip in the locker room, at the training table. And one particular time, hey Chip, and that meant everyone, Jerry has a time where he's gonna belittle the skinny little guard. And I said, what, Jerry? He said, are you eating that meat? And I said, yeah, it's a training table. Of course I'm going to eat it. You hypocrite. You call yourself a Christian. He's always hitting my faith. What are you talking about? Doesn't the Bible say, thou shall not kill? And I thought to myself, oh, yeah. He said, someone killed that animal and you're eating it. You Christians, you're all hypocrites. And something down inside said, I'm not sure that's the proper translation or application of that text, but you know something? I didn't have an answer for him. I couldn't say. And so what I want you to know tonight, the Bible does not forbid killing. The Bible doesn't even forbid war. What the Bible forbids is intentional murder, the taking of another person's life. But what's behind it? I mean, why? What's the purpose of the sixth commandment? I think we find the heart of it in Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. It says, whoever sheds the blood of a man, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God has God made man. And there's, we could go a lot of directions on this passage. Capital punishment is not the issue here, okay? Whether capital punishment deters or not is not the issue of this text. The issue of this text is, as the program of God is unfolding, God gives the highest penalty for what? He's bringing about justice. That if a person's life is taken, the absolute highest penalty will be rendered. And he gives us the reason why. Is because every human being, Christian, non-Christian, believer, unbeliever, every race, every background, every age, the weak and the feeble, the young and the strong, those in power, those that are being abused, those people that have no right, no vote and can say nothing, those people that, quote, are of no value to society, and those that are important and powerful and wealthy and make all the decisions, every single human being on the face of the earth is made in the image of God. And what's behind this command is that God sees every single person through the lens that they have his thumbprint, they have his image, they have the ability of mind and will and emotions and decisions, they have the capacity to love, they have a spirit within them given by God. The most precious commodity in the world is human life. And what's behind this command is that every time there is a senseless killing, if you could imagine being your mate or your son or your daughter, if you can imagine the closest friend you've ever had and them being that woman in the car that some 19-year-old who got bored said, hey, you know what? I felt like killing someone today. So, boom! And if you can imagine what it would be like to come home after work or be called at work or at school and someone say to you, I'm sorry, your mom or your dad, they were just in a parked car in downtown DC and a 19-year-old was bored and so they shot him. And I want you to imagine what your emotions would feel like and your anger and your rage and your lack of understanding and just literally ready to go through the roof. What I want you to hear is that's how God feels about every human being on the planet. It's how he feels about black people and white people. That's how he feels about Hispanic people and Chinese people. That's how he feels about people that have absolutely nothing and no education and live in the forest regions of the Amazons. And that's how he feels about people who live in Beverly Hills. Every human being that breathes is made in the image of God. And God says, I'm going to give the highest protection, the strongest boundary around human life. Human life is sacred. That's what's behind the sixth command. Now turn in your notes and let's dig a little bit together and let's get down to some of the obvious applications of this command. Notice in Job 14 in the Good News Bible, verse 5, it says, the length of a man's life is decided beforehand, the number of months he will live. You, God, have settled it, and it can't be changed. The NIV gets the idea. It says it can't be extended. It can't be tampered with. What's going on here? In essence, no one has the right to number a man's days but God. That's what Job's saying is, God knows, God is sovereign, God is in control, he has a plan. God determines the length of a man's days. I don't have the right to prematurely intervene and say, you know what, that life's not worth much. That life has taken up too much room. You know what, that life is old and decrepit and doesn't add much value to society. You know what? That life has a cleft palate. And you know what? They'll never be loved anyway, so let's snuff it out. You know, that life is a boy. What we really were looking for was a girl this time around, so let's snuff it out. You know, that life will never be a productive part of society. That life, no one has the right to pirate God's prerogative and end a human life prematurely. No one. Very obvious applications. Under the ethical implications, you might jot these down. First and foremost, it is obvious, is homicide, murder. I mean, it is absolutely forbidden in Scripture from the sixth command to willfully, intentionally kill someone. And you know what? I'm just really praying that there's not a lot of application to this point in the message. I hope there's no one here that is saying, I issued a contract on someone. I got really upset with my ex-mate or an ex-boss. And, you know, we live near Chicago and I had a friend and he gave me the friend of a friend. And I'm teasing, but you know something? That sounds so bizarre. But have you read the paper lately where a professional athlete was indicted recently for what? Finding an undercover cop that he paid to kill his wife. God says that's forbidden. The second application is not only do you not have the right to number someone else's days, you don't have the right to number your days. Suicide is forbidden. And you say, well, it's my life. I mean, I can do with my, it's not your life. And I'll tell you what, I've been on the other end of that. I've been on the other end of the phone call where the man has found his wife lying on the bed, filled with pills and dead with the note because she was so depressed and so discouraged. I'm sorry, it wasn't you, it wasn't the kids, it's nothing about you. I felt overwhelmed by life. I couldn't take it anymore. I knew it would be better for everyone if I just exited now. Nothing could be further from the truth. And when you counsel people who've lived with a mom or a dad or a brother or a friend who's committed suicide, the people who get left with all the junk and all the pain are the people that are left behind. And God forbids it. Suicide is sin. Not only is homicide and suicide, but feticide. That's the killing of the preborn. And by the way, you know, there's the Bible is very, very clear that the preborn is a human being. And medical science is as well. Dr. Jerome Lejeune, professor of fundamental genetics at the University of René Descartes in Paris and discoverer of the genetic basis for Down syndrome, says, pretty high-profile doctor. Life has a very, very long history, but each individual has a very neat beginning, the moment of conception. And to accept the fact that after fertilization has taken place, a new human being is coming to being is no longer a matter of taste or of opinion. The human nature of the human being from conception to old age is not a metaphysical contention. It is a plain experimental evidence. Dr. Michelin Matthews Roth, principal researcher in the Department of Medicine at Harvard, agrees. He says, "It is an accepted fact that life of any individual organism reproducing by sexual reproduction begins at conception or fertilization, the time when the egg cell is formed in the female and the sperm unite. They join a single new cell called the zygote, which is human life." And the evidence is overwhelming. So to kill the preborn is prohibited by the sixth commandment. Infanticide, killing babies that are born, is prohibited. And you say, how could that happen? And I'm sure you've read as I've read. We have children who have minor defects in the United States of America, and talk about ridiculous. We have doctors who get out a little pad and they write a prescription, no food for 15 days. And they kill kids in this country. We have children that were to be aborted who are born alive, who are maliciously killed in this country. It's murder. But because first it was when they take their first breath, then they're a human being. And then now in some Senate reviews, we actually have people saying, until the baby leaves the hospital. This was actually given in a report to the Senate. Until the baby leaves the hospital, it's not really a human being. The sixth command says homicide, suicide, feticide, infanticide, and euthanasia is yet another one. Euthanasia, we're not talking about passive euthanasia. We're not talking about undoing plugs to keep people alive whose life is a vegetable or they can't sustain life on their own. We're talking about active euthanasia. We're talking about people that do have difficult medical problems and say, I don't like the suffering, I don't like the pain, I don't like what I can't do anymore, and so will you help me kill myself? Only God has the prerogative to number a person's days. Do I understand why some illnesses do what they do to people? No. Do I understand the suffering and in the sovereignty of God what he's doing? No. But the moment we start drawing lines and saying, this life has value, that life doesn't have value, this life does, it doesn't, we are on such a slippery slope. And if you think I'm joking, just take your eyes and look over the ocean and do a little research into Sweden and Denmark, where they've had assisted suicide. You know what older people do? Older people in those countries, they don't want to go to the doctor because you know what they write prescriptions there for? No longer useful to society. And they inject them, both for and against their will. The sixth command says the most precious thing on this planet is human life, and to murder someone, to infanticide, to feticide, to suicide, and to just about every other side you can think of is wrong. I think that's pretty clear. Stated positively, are you ready for this? We are to cherish our own neighbor's life as much as our own flesh. That's really the heart of the sixth command. You're to cherish the value of a person regardless of background or race or creed or color or benefit to society or age. We're to cherish our neighbor's life just as much as you cherish your own flesh and your own will to live. And we must assign to God and allow only God to determine and number someone's days. And that's the heart of the sixth command. It's not really hard to understand. And by the way, I think at this point in a group like this, the application is pretty low, right? I don't think there's a lot of people here that have, you know, have multiple ways that you've been wrestling with, you know, if I could just break the murder habit. But I think when you dig down a little bit and you hear the words of Jesus, maybe the application might be a little bit closer. Because what we know is that the law and the letter of the law was written And on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus would say, "You have heard it said, but I say to you, you've heard it said, letter of the law, that's the truth, but what I say to you, let me give you the spirit behind the law. Let me give you the why behind the what. Let me talk to you about issues of the heart concerning murder that may not be a club that is raised and pounds a person's head and cracks a skull and kills them and takes a life. But let me talk about issues of the heart and issues of the lips and things that happen in the human heart that from my perspective as the eternal God of the universe and the Savior of the world, my evaluation, it's murder." And that's what Jesus does. So let's look at some not so obvious applications of the sixth command. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 21, "You've heard what it was said to a people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment." It's the letter, it's the truth. "But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raca, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell." Now, before we move on and we get into the application, that pen I've been asking you to bring, are you ready? Pull it out. Let's do a little Bible study. And Bible study is making observations, what does it say? Doing some examination to say, what does it mean? And then making application, what's it mean to me? And so let's go through and let's start with, "But I tell you, anyone who is angry," put a circle around angry with his brother, and then put a box around subject to judgment. You're going to see a parallel occur. So you have anyone who's angry will be subject to judgment. And then drop down, and anyone who says to his brother, put a circle around the word raca, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. Then put a box around Sanhedrin. So circle around raca, and then a box around Sanhedrin. And then as you move on, "But anyone who says, you fool," put a circle around you fool, "will be in danger of," put a box around the phrase, "the fire of hell." And let me see if I can help explain what's happening in this text that might lift it and give you some insight. Jesus says, "You've heard it said about murder, and you know the letter of the law and the actual killing of someone, but I say to you," option or level one, "anyone who is angry with his brother," and there's a couple different Greek words for anger. This is the kind of anger that is a smoldering anger. This is not the kind of anger where something happens and you blow up quickly. This word is for an anger that smolters. This is an anger that's rooted in bitterness and resentment. This is the kind of anger that, you know, when a certain people's names come to your mind, your stomach begins to tighten up. This is the kind of things that over sometimes weeks or months or even years that you have this perverted sense that they have so hurt you and so violated you and done things so unmentionable to you that you have actual anger fantasies at times. You know, you don't really want them to get killed, but if they were in like a mild auto accident, it would be like, okay, you know? And you would never admit that. If they lost their job, it would be sort of cool. If the person that they ran off with would leave them like they left you, it would kind of bring a little grin to your face. This is a smoldering type of resentment or anger or bitterness that's rooted in vengeance, in wanting to pay someone back. And Jesus says, "You've heard it said, do not murder," but I want to tell you, level one, if you have this type of ongoing anger in your heart, then what's he say? What's the box around? You're subject to judgment. And the word here for judgment was, well, the lower courts in the local Jewish village. He says that kind of anger means that you are liable and ought to have to go before the local village judge and deal with that issue because, by my estimation, you are guilty of a type of murder.
Chip will be right back. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Chip's message, Stop the Violence, is from his series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. As Chip explained, rather than a harsh bunch of rules, the commandments are actually life-saving instructions from a father who loves his children. God's Boundaries for Abundant Living provides a high view of God that'll give you a new appreciation of your relationship with Him, creating a solid foundation for every aspect of your life. If that's something you'd like to learn more about, we want to help. For a limited time, the CDs for God's Boundaries are discounted, and the MP3s are absolutely free. You'll find God's Boundaries resources on our website, livingontheedge.org. or give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. Well, Chip, I know you've got a great application for today, but before we get there, could you just take a minute and tell us what God's doing to encourage you and the team?
One of the great joys of my life is the letters, emails, Facebook messages that I get from people literally all around the country and all around the world, and they tell me these amazing stories of how living on the edge has been a tool used by God to change their life. Maybe you're one of those people that have really been impacted by the ministry. I mean, I hear from people from every age, profession, background, every person imaginable. And what I hear is this same constant drumbeat of, God spoke to me. I took a step of faith. Now God's using me.
Great.
And what I want you to know is that that's the heart of our ministry. We want to put teaching and tools and small group materials and downloadable things that we actually give away to help people not just live like Christians, but be ambassadors and agents of change and grace in their homes, their schools, and their workplaces. And if you're one of those people that God has impacted you and actually you're impacting others because of living on the edge, I have a very specific request. Would you consider becoming a monthly financial partner? And of course, it helps us practically, no doubt about it. It would really help us to know that X amount of dollars are coming in from a monthly partner. But literally, even more than that, it's about a group of people saying, we want to be a part of this mission to make a difference in the crazy world that we're living in. We want to make an impact, and we want to make an impact with you all. God's spoken to us. God's changed us. We want to help you help others. And so here's my request today. Would you pray and just simply say, Lord, if this is part of your desire for me to partner with Living on the Edge on a monthly basis, will you show me? And then show me what that looks like and how much. And what I will say is whatever amount that is, it's perfect, whatever God shows you. But what I long to see is people who partner that are on the team, a part of the family, and we make a difference together each and every day. Thank you in advance for doing whatever God shows you to do.
Well, if Living on the Edge is ministering to you, and you want to be a part of ministering to others, today would be a great day to join the team. A recurring monthly donation will significantly impact how we move ahead with helping Christians here and around the world be Christians who live like Christians. Now, to give a gift online, just go to livingontheedge.org, or if you prefer, just give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. On behalf of Chip and the staff here at Living on the Edge, thank you for your prayers and your financial support. Well, now here's Chip with his application.
As you listen to today's broadcast, let me ask you a question. What was going through your mind? I didn't grow up as a Christian, and I certainly heard of the Ten Commandments like most of you had, and when thou shalt not kill rang through my mind as a kid or even as a young adult, I thought to myself, you know, there's a lot of commandments I've probably really messed up on, but boy, I'm glad that one's not a part of my life. And we learn today that thou shalt not kill really is about no murder, the two words. And murder is a premeditated act. It's not simply killing. But behind this command is a principle that is absolutely critical to our understanding, that life is sacred. All of life is sacred. And that God esteems more than anything else in all the world that He's created, it is human life. And that's why as we looked at the passages on capital punishment, and that's why there was justice, and that's why God put laws in, they're all designed to protect human life. Now, let me ask you a question. Before we look at what Jesus is going to say about this and how the issue of murder goes well beyond our actions to our thoughts and to our lips, have you ever been a part of, in any way, promoting the end of human life? Have you been a part of the Christian community, of which there are many, and many of which I have counseled, that either had an abortion or convinced your girlfriend or wife to have an abortion? Are you a part of the Christian community that unknowingly sends your kid into an arcade while you go shopping, and if you would take the time to look over his or her shoulder, For 45 minutes or up to an hour and a half, they play nothing but games that kill and maim and shoot and destroy and send one critical message: human life doesn't matter. Are you one of us that, not even thinking about this command, have rented videos and put TV programs on your screen that have infiltrated your mind and your children's mind and your heart with a casualness toward watching people being blown up or killed or stabbed because it's really interesting and there is a mystery to figure out, and you just try and look beyond the violence, the violence, the violence. And yet you have desensitized yourself, like I have at times, to the sacredness of life. You know, maybe the way to end this program is for you to say, "Oh God, I never saw it that way. Oh God, I've repressed the memories of those things that I did. Oh God, this is painful and I need your help. Lord God, I thank you that when Jesus died on the cross, he paid for all my sin. And I need to own this one. I need to get it up on the surface of my mind. And I need to go through the grieving process of the life that I took, or the violence and the disregard for life that I'm allowing in the minds of my kids and in my home." You know, maybe we need to really rethink what it means. No murder. Maybe we need to stop the violence in our homes before we ask God to stop it out there. Why don't you go do what God wants you to do? He will honor your genuine repentance.
Do you wish you could hear Living on the Edge when it fits into your schedule? You can. For those of you who want to listen to Living on the Edge whenever and wherever you want, download the free Chip Ingram app. You'll find the Chip Ingram app at the App Store or Google Play today. Well, be with us again tomorrow when Chip continues our current series, God's Boundaries for Abundant Living. Until then, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.